Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 296, recorded June 6th, 2016. It's 6616 today.
It is 6616.
And we're on 296. That's a lot of sixes.
Yeah.
It's a nice even number.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Hello.
We would like to make a little announcement. We are almost to our 2,000th subscriber of the Aquarimax YouTube channel.
We're at 1,909.
Yeah, and it seems to be going fairly quickly, so we should be up to 2,000 in time, we hope.
So that's exciting. So thank you to all of you who have gone and subscribed, yeah. And hopefully you like the videos and they're useful for you.
I know that many of the subscribers are among our Aquarimax listeners, so thank you, yes. All right, let's see who's on the list of contributors for the day.
We have Matt in Perth, Western Australia, Neil in the UK, and Mick in Carnforth in the UK. Have we heard from Neil before?
Neil is new.
Neil, you automatically get the alliteration. Or look, Neil is new, and so he automatically gets the alliteration award. I get one, too.
Okay.
Okay, let's go to Matt first.
Yes.
And he sent us a picture of Dory and her companions.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll put that up. He says, "Hello, Aquarimax. Let us start with some good news. Dory no longer has any visible white spots on her skin. Huzzah! Also, my turban snails have decided it is awfully lonely in their aquarium and decided to have 200 babies to keep them company.
Wow.
I can see many baby snails on the glass. I dream of a day that the snails are so good that they can keep the glass completely free of algae. More babies mean more calcium being used up in the water. I have calcium powder supplement. I will have to dose more frequently to make sure the babies can survive. The calcium test process is a tedious one. I have to complete a mini titration. At university, the classic titration would be to add a base with a pH change indicator dye to a beaker. Then slowly add the acid until the color change happens. Sometimes I would add 20 milliliters of acid, then slow it right down to drop by drop. It could take just a single drop to completely change the color of the solution. That is what I have to do in miniature with the calcium test. A long, tedious test, but an accurate one. Have you ever tried digital test kits? How often do you access your water quality?" Before we get to that question,
yes,
I would like to make a comment that is totally irrelevant to fish, but I like it.
Okay.
And I imagine this is how they do it in Australia, but Matt spells color C-O-L-O-U-R, which is how I like to spell it, even though we're in the U.S., because I think it's such a fabulous word that it deserves an extra letter. And I would always get in trouble at school because they said I was spelling it wrong. And I said, "No, I'm just spelling it better."
Okay. That makes
sense. Okay, now we can go back to fish.
Okay. Digital test kits. Have I ever tried them? Short answer? No. I never have.
What's the long answer?
The long answer is no, I never have because I never have afforded one.
Oh, okay. That might be more of a medium answer, but that's okay.
That's true. But I think that would be really handy.
How do they work?
I would like to try it. Oh, well, there are different... It depends on what you're testing. Like, if you want to test for total dissolved solids, you can use a refractometer.
Ooh, refractometer.
For example. And those are cool. They
that
actually
sounds something in, like, a comic book.
Measure how the angle of light goes through water at when there are different levels of dissolved
substances in it. Like, the bad guy's going to rob a bank with his refractometer.
Really? I think that would go down very poorly for the bank
robber. I know, but it sounds good.
Okay. Like fraculator?
Yeah.
Okay. I see.
Still get fraculated.
Yeah. So I never have, but I think it would be really nice to do that. Easier in many ways. I mean, you like with a refractometer, you have to calibrate it every so often.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose that's a little extra work, but just being able to go doing with a drop and push the button and boing, it tells you.
Tells you all the stuff that you want to know.
That
would
be
neat.
I mean, that's only one, you know, a refractometer tests for total dissolved solids. But there are other test parameters you can test with different digital test kits these days. Quite a different, like, they have pH ones, mm-hmm. They've got all kinds of things. So
it's fancy.
But how often do I assess water quality? Well, I would say While I'm first setting up a tank and making sure everything's established, I like to do it pretty frequently. Like when I'm cycling a tank, I typically do it every day or every other day.
To keep an eye on it.
Mm-hmm. When I know it's fully cycled, I then slow down. And usually, honestly, I don't test often unless I suspect a problem. When I do suspect a problem and I'm not sure what the cause is, I will often do the whole battery of tests available to me.
What's going on.
So I can, yeah, figure out what's going on. That often will give me a clue. So I think that's about what I do. Cycling, do it all the time. Not cycling, only when I see that there's a problem and I can't figure out what's causing it. More or less.
Okay.
But that's formally. I mean, informally, yeah. You know, I assess water quality with other measures, but in terms of testing.
Actual test kits, right. Kind of bits.
Right. Like with the goldfish tank over here.
It always looks beautiful.
I look at the goldfish, make sure everybody's doing okay. But I...
If they look stressed out, you'll test it.
Yeah, and I change like 80% of the water every week, so...
They don't usually get stressed out.
It's usually not a problem. Okay.
They're pretty happy goldfish.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Matt goes on, I have told you what temperature it gets to over here, and you told me what temperature it gets to over there, but I have also forgotten. So we can have the whole exchange over again. Hooray! And he says, hooray for bad memories generating recycled podcast content. It's usually my job, isn't it? Last summer, it got to 44 degrees Celsius, which is 111 degrees Fahrenheit on the hottest day. That's very hot. At its coldest in the winter, we get to 0 degrees Celsius, 32 degrees Fahrenheit. Speaking of hot and cold, our swamp cooler just turned on, and I think Russ is going to go turn it back off again so that you can actually hear what we're saying on this recording. There we go.
Okay, we're just going to keep it rolling, though. Mm-hmm. Hopefully okay. You heard all that. So, you were saying that...
32 degrees Fahrenheit. I wish it only got to 32 degrees Fahrenheit.
So do
over here.
I.
That would be
really
an awesome
nice.
Winter.
But 111 Fahrenheit...
We get to,
Fahrenheit,
like, 10 degrees Fahrenheit.
In the winter?
Us.
Oh, yeah, even
in
lower.
In January. And lower. it'll just stay there for weeks. And it's so bleak and depressing. And you just think, why... do we live here? And then it turns into summer and you go up in the mountains and you go, oh yes, I remember why we live here now. But January is not a good time to come to Utah.
That's true. Now, the lowest that I remember it getting recently in our area was 6 Fahrenheit.
Was that this last winter?
That was when the power went out. Remember that?
In the duplex?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's when the power went out. And it was
cold.
Really cold. But how cold is that in Celsius? I'm looking that up. I always forget. That's -14.4 Celsius.
So it's cold.
So pretty cold.
Yeah.
And that's how cold. It doesn't always get that cold, but it very often gets fairly close to that in January.
We have weeks where it's just frozen, like below freezing, well below freezing for weeks at a time.
For weeks at a time without ever going up. Even
weeks.
In the daytime, in the middle of the day, it doesn't get warmer.
When we all say, why don't humans hibernate?
And where we are, in this part of the northern part of the state, it doesn't get past 111 Fahrenheit very often.
No.
I don't remember it doing that in...
105 is probably average tops.
But once in a while, it'll
not
get to
like
107
record,
or 109.
Not record-breaking,
right.
But
in the summer, it's very common for it to get well over 100 Fahrenheit, and for it to get like 106, 107 is common in August and July and August.
Because this is, it's mountain and it's desert.
Yeah.
Is what Utah is. So it's kind of, you got the extremes there. There's not a lot of rolling valley grassland kind of thing going on.
Yeah. So it's not... I guess we probably cover a wider range, but it probably gets a little hotter in Perth, but it gets a lot colder here.
Yeah. He says, parts of Western Australia get snow sometimes, but on the whole, Australia is just so old and flat that we don't have much extreme cold. We are in the middle of a tectonic plate, so there are no new significant earthquakes or plate collisions to generate mountains. Perth is also right next to the ocean, which stops it from getting extremely hot or cold. That's always nice. I'm a 5-minute drive from the beach and a 7-minute walk to the Swan River. Sometimes there are dolphins that swim up the river chasing fish. Wow.
That would be cool.
That's cool. Perth is classified as a Mediterranean climate, similar to Italy. That's a beautiful climate to be classified as.
I miss the Italian climate, I'll tell you that.
San Francisco has the closest weather to Perth that I experienced while in the USA in 2014, although we do not get fog here often. Tell me about your geography and climate. How does that affect your fish keeping?
I guess we talked a little bit about that, didn't we?
I guess we kind of did, yes. Where the mountains in Utah are still fairly young and sharp, so there's not a lot of gradual foothills up to the mountains. You're in the valley, and then you're in the mountains. Like, from where we're sitting, looking out our window right now, boom, there's the mountains right now. But it's flat around us.
And there are some foothills, but not a lot.
Not a lot.
But it does. We do get the mountain breezes coming down at night and
that helps.
Things like that, which is nice in the summer. I would say also, because we're near the mountains, we get some of the rain that gets caught in the mountains and then comes down. So that's why we can survive here in what would otherwise be a desert because of the irrigation that is facilitated
that melts in the mountains,
by the mountains. Yeah.
Climate-wise, it's really dry in Utah. Utah is the second driest state in the U.S.
Nevada is the first.
Nevada's the first. And it's really dry. And I feel it all the time. I feel like a desiccated sponge. Especially after living in Hawaii with all the humidity and then coming back to Hawaii and my skin just went, wow, what are you doing to me?
Yeah, it was very harsh change.
And it's a little bit better in the summer, but of course in the winter, the colder air is even less humid. It's more dry. And as soon as the weather starts to change, my knuckles crack and bleed and it's a mess. So I don't like the dryness.
And how does that affect our fish keeping? Well, I do remember one summer when we lived in that little apartment down in Springville with the southern...
It was not an apartment.
It was an oven.
It was an oven.
And we actually lost...
Like, I think it was a kiln.
We lost fish, frogs, and hermit crabs.
We probably could have made pottery just sitting on the counter.
Oh, it was awful. So, we had this apartment. It was the last apartment in the building, and it faced south and west. The big, thick brick walls, which were thick enough to collect all the heat, and then slowly radiated out all night.
All day and all night.
Yeah. So we baked
the landlord wouldn't believe us and like install any kind of anything.
So we lost fish despite our best efforts. We tried, all the tricks. We lost fish, we lost frogs, and we lost hermit crabs to the
heat. And we moved out as soon as we could.
As soon as we could, yeah. It was really scary. That is, I think, the worst effect that we've had with our creatures. I mean, we have to take care to cool things off in the summertime. We have the evaporative cooler, which works well in this dry climate, helps keep the fish and other creatures fairly cool. But we do have to
watch the gecko tanks to make sure they don't get too hot.
Right, because they're not supposed to go over 85 Fahrenheit. And
so sometimes we have to
take
them down into the basement because it stays cooler down there.
Last summer, we had to take almost all of our creatures down to the basement.
Because the swamp cooler died.
Yeah, and it was
July
when they were fixing a roof, and we couldn't. It was a week in July when it got to 97 Fahrenheit in the house, according to the thermometer on the wall, and it was unpleasant. So nearly all of our creatures were downstairs for that period of time to keep them cool, and that helps because downstairs is a basement, and because it is in the basement, it stayed a lot cooler. So it was probably in the low 80s down there, and so everybody was okay. Trying to think what else climate-wise. Well, certainly it affects live foods, the kinds of live foods like I raise outside, like Daphne and so on.
That's true.
From about October to March, the Daphne containers are usually either frozen or too cold to do anything. So I either have to take Daphne in the house and raise them in the house for that time period, or not raise them during the time period like I did last winter because I thought they were all dead. And now I've got hundreds of them.
Which is exciting.
So those are some ways that it affects the hobby, I think. Can you think of anything else that climatically or geographically we have to... I would say this is not really climate, but we do get hard water here, partly because it's a dry area and it's going through... goes through limestone, and as the water is evaporating as it's going through limestone areas, and so it gets a lot of mineral buildup in it. So our water's really hard.
So that has an effect on what kind of fish you can keep, unless you have like an RO filter.
Right. And so I do think it affects things that way, that the fish that tend to thrive in this area tend to be like rift lake cichlids and so on. There's actually not too far from here down in Draper, there is a facility where there's a guy who owns property that has a hot spring on it, and his water comes out of, he pumps water out of this hot spring, 78 degrees, pumps it through his huge fish facility into, and it's this, you know, high mineral rich water. He raises all kinds of Malawi, Tanganyikan, Victorian cichlids in his facility with water he doesn't have to heat and he doesn't have to filter because it flows through.
Which is pretty nice.
So that's something, how the natural area kind of affects things around here. So I could go down there, and I have gone down there and bought really nice fish from this guy because he can raise them very cheaply because it's just all flow through without heating and without filtration.
Mm-hmm.
Really nice. And without water changes, amazing.
He's a lucky guy.
He's got constant natural water changes. So there are a few ways.
Okay. He goes on, I was not sure if you understood osmolality or loquaciousness. Loquaciousness, I think I've got down.
Yeah, loquaciousness we understood.
That would be me.
You know what? Osmolarity, I was somewhat familiar with that term, but osmolality I was not. So I'm learning something new here.
If you did, this paragraph is for any listeners who did not. Osmolality refers to the number of moles of a solute per kilogram of solvent. Osmolarity measures concentration per unit volume instead of per unit mass. Either way, they're both confusing, so I should have just said maintain the correct salt concentration. That's okay. It's good for us
cool
to learn
words.
Big words. Yeah.
Cool word of the day.
Yeah. Loquaciousness is a term I only learned recently, and like jubilant, it is fun to say. Loquacious means tending to talk a great deal. Like I said, I'm a wonderful example. I tend to talk a great deal in these emails. Sometimes I feel a little bit guilty about that, as others seem to be much more succinct. Don't feel guilty.
We laud your loquaciousness.
Yes, and I tell you what, Matt, the day that I am succinct, you can be succinct. I also now remember having guppies in my first aquarium. David Attenborough had guppies in his childhood aquariums, too. So clearly, guppies are the way to great success. I will investigate marine epoxy and any other ways to seal wood and get back to you guys soon. Matt from Perth.
Thank you, Matt.
Mm-hmm. It's time for that station break thingy when I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquarimax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquarimax.com. Or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquarimax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99. Shall we go to Neil in the UK?
Let us do so.
New Neil?
Yeah, new Neil.
Greetings, fellow fishy fanatics.
Oh, look at that.
I am a new listener and just wanted to reach out to you both and tell you what an awesome job you do. I deliver pizzas in the evenings for extra money to fund my aquarium obsession, and I listen to the podcast during my shifts. Oh.
Cool.
That's good. We can make your deliveries more entertaining. Imagine my glee at discovering the show and realizing I have a whole back catalog to work through. Yay! I don't have a question for you guys yet, but I will think of something and contribute soon, I'm sure.
Okay. On that note, just a quick reminder for those who may not know, you can listen to every single podcast back from podcast number one if you go to our website, aquarimax.com/podcasts. Every single one of them is there. You can't get them all on iTunes,
mm-hmm.
but you can get them all there. So there you go.
The
I don't know if you want to listen to episode
yeah,
one.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I've episode one, for which we apologize. I was still boring.
We're learning.
Yeah.
You know, still. We're always still learning. But it was a little rough back in the beginning. It's still a little rough sometimes, but that's okay.
Depends on how tired I am. If I'm like waffling on in my sleep and you have to wake me up in the middle of the podcast.
But if you think about it, if you're delivering pizza... Without a podcast or with a podcast? I'd rather listen to a podcast that's not that great rather than not listen to one at all.
Yes, that's true.
As long as it's talking about something cool.
Mm-hmm. He says, I currently only have one tank after just getting back into the hobby after a few years out, which is comprised of a blue dwarf gourami, neon and glow light tetras, which are both breeding, yay, a whole gang of cherry shrimp, assassin snail, started with two and now have seven, and a placo who likes hiding out under his bogwood. Oh, and a jungle of plants. I shall send some pictures in the near future and look forward to each podcast with bated breath. Welcome, Neil. We are happy to make your evenings more pleasant.
Yes, thank you for becoming an Aquarimaxer. Mm-hmm. That's exciting. It's always good to get a new contributor.
Yeah. Who do we have next?
It's Mick.
And you look like you're opening a link to show
me something. I am
going to
open a link because Mick sent us one, and I'm going to
open it up for you.
Here. He sent us fishy news.
Did he? Oh, so we can have a fishy news segment.
Right.
Nice. Lovely.
That was very nice of him. So I'm going to open it up here, and I'm going to let you read what he said also, because that's what we want to do. Sorry, folks. Technological goofiness here.
Is that what they call it these days?
I don't know. I just called it that. We can see. Here we go.
Okay. He says, hi, guys. As I had muted the idea of fish-related news recently, I thought I would send you this link. Wonderful yet unsurprising news that aquariums have a beneficial impact on stress and well-being. So he sent us a link.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm trying to open. I think muted might be a typo.
Yeah, I think so too.
Because I don't understand that exactly what it means. Sense. But I'm sure...
He put forth the idea of fishy news.
He did put forth the idea, which I think is a great idea. And now we're going to look at this first bit of fishy news.
Well, maybe while it's opening, we should talk about our observation about Tiki. We can have our gecko corner moment.
Okay, what happened?
When she does her little head shake thing to Jake.
Oh, okay. You tell him about that. It's kind of cool.
So we've seen her. Well, Russ has seen her a couple times. I've seen her do it once. When we get our male crested gecko out, Jake, and have them close to each other, Tiki will do this weird head shaking thing. And it's not like she's shaking her head or swinging her head back to side. And she's not bobbing her head. It's like her head is vibrating. It's really weird.
It is.
It's hard to explain. But so any of you other gecko keepers out there, have you noticed this in any of your geckos? Is this gecko flirting, or is she telling him, you can't have my phone number?
Yeah.
I have to go wash my hair. So I don't know. I thought it was interesting. So if anybody has any insight, you can send it to us, and maybe then I will know what she's telling him. I think Jake is still pretty oblivious. Mostly all he does is just walk over her and hop off to wherever he's going.
Yeah, he doesn't seem all that interested in anything else.
Although we're pretty sure she started laying eggs.
Yeah.
Because she's to that age, and she'll get really fat in the month, and then she'll have a night where she's really restless and she doesn't want to eat.
And then the next morning
she's skinny again.
And she wants to eat.
And she wants to eat. So we figure she's burying them somewhere in the tank. They're, of course, not fertilized.
But very occasionally, crested geckos are reputed to hatch eggs due to parthenogenesis, so you never know. There's a remote chance.
Then we could have a Tiki, too. And it would be so cute.
Okay, I've got this.
Did you find it?
It finally worked. I got it to open up.
Okay, tell us some highlights.
Well, the title of it, and this is in petbusinessworld.co.uk, the article is called Keeping Fish Calms Children.
Must be why our kids are so happy with their lives.
Yeah. And it talks about various things. There's a study that it talks about that says, I quote, pet-owning households are meeting and exceeding teachers' expectations more than non-pet households.
Children in pet-owning households.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Children in pet-owning households.
Hooray! See, critters are good for your brain.
It talked about how the different benefits of keeping fish, says... a lot of the people believe that fish had a calming effect, taught responsibility, helped with social skills, and helped with cognitive development,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was cool.
That is very cool.
So if you want to check that out, it goes more into depth about it, but mm-hmm. I think it's...
we will put the link up, of course.
Yeah, we'll put the link up. But it's quite a cool thing to see. And like Mick said, it's not a surprise that they're seeing this, but it's cool to see
it's
that it's
gratifying.
Yeah, it's gratifying. There's data on it.
Mm-hmm.
More data on it.
Yeah.
So.
That's very cool. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Mick, for sending us that.
Right.
Did we have anything else?
We did. A couple of things. One, still looking for interviewees to come on the show. We want to do more live shows, like we said. Or if you don't want to do it live, we can set it up so it's not live, but we would like to do interviews more often, at any rate. And I'm going to put out two requests because I'm trying to, you know, do interviews that people are interested in, obviously, and things we haven't done yet. One thing that we've had a recent request for is crayfish. If there are any of you out there who keep crayfish or have kept crayfish, you know, you have considerable experience keeping crayfish and would like to be interviewed, there's another format we are interested in trying out too. If you don't want to do a half an hour interview, we could try doing a much shorter one and then just include it as part of the podcast, where we have a normal podcast and we say, and here's our interview segment this week, and have it be 5 minutes, you know, where it's just a briefer version with the highlights rather than the in-depth information that we would do in a longer interview. So if the idea of doing a 30-minute interview is intimidating or uncomfortable in any way, maybe a 5-minute interview would be fine. So if you're interested in that might be a possibility. So crayfish, if there's anyone out there who has kept them, I've kept them, but it's been years, and I don't really feel like I could give you up-to-date information on keeping them with the limited experience I had. I mean, I kept them for a while, and they did fairly well, but it wasn't for all that long, and it's been a long time. So, anyway, there's that. And that is an intimidating noise. Speaking of intimidation, that noise is intimidating me. Okay.
I think they were 1960s aliens.
That sounded like it.
They wore garbage cans as costumes and walked very slowly. But I did not fall down and break my ankle.
That's good. And you weren't wearing high heels either.
No high heels for me.
Another one.
Torture things.
Sorry. Didn't mean sorry, to. I thought you were done.
I'm just muttering.
That's okay. So, the other one that I would be, I mean, anything. We're all interested in anything that we haven't done. We haven't interviewed someone about any aquatic creature. So, we're open. But another one
anybody
I would really like
there
to focus on.
Sea dragons?
I think that's pretty hard. You'd have to have an aquarium, like a public aquarium.
Know.
Or at least a really fancy
but
private
I
one.
But I want them.
I know. But I don't think they're legal anywhere. But this is the thing, okay? I would, on my bucket list is Tanganyikan shell dwellers. And I think I've mentioned this before, but if any of you have kept Tanganyikan shell dwellers, I want to hear about it because I want to keep those sometime and I would love to hear more about it. I've done some of my own research into it, but would love to hear more about it. And tell them what's going to happen in our mall soon.
Oh my goodness.
This is cool.
So we found this out a little bit by accident. My son was in the mall with his friends, and he saw a kiosk, and he went over to it because they had a veiled chameleon at the kiosk. It turns out they're opening an aquarium in the mall that's, you know, what, 5 minutes tops from our house. It's down the street. It's probably like a mile and a half.
Yeah.
Away.
A large aquarium.
Which is super exciting.
Yeah. Prior to this, there was the other aquarium that we've been to, but the other aquarium is about an hour away from here.
And it's great.
And
it's just
great,
it's an hour away.
But it's an hour away. Now we're going to have this one that's closer.
Mm-hmm.
That will also be really cool from what we can understand.
And they're going to have mermaids.
Not real ones.
Oh, shh. You can't tell people that.
Okay.
What if you shatter somebody's illusions?
Oh, sorry, illusions.
But they're going to have mermaids. What if you shatter my illusions? I want to be a mermaid. I want to go get a job at the aquarium as a mermaid. That would
okay.
be so fun.
And I'll get a job as an aquarium guy cleaning
not
the
a
tanks.
Mermaid.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, it sounds pretty cool. We're going to see if we can get...
I guess you could be a merman.
I guess I could.
Okay, sorry. I'll
not
stop.
Quite same effect, though.
Yeah.
At least, yeah. Anyway. I think we're going to try to see if we can get an interview with them.
Which would be
go
cool.
Go down there and... You know, do an interview on site. It would be great. We've been wanting to do stuff
it'd
like that for a long time.
Be close enough.
Yeah. And the last time we talked to the other aquarium about doing it, they were very receptive to it. We just never...
They were just about to move locations.
Mm-hmm. But they said, that sounds like a great idea. We
yeah.
want to do it, but we're moving our location. And then we never got back
and
to them after
we
that.
Moved.
Yeah, we moved. Everybody's changing locations.
Yeah.
Anyway, this new aquarium is so close. It seems like it would be worth a try.
Yeah.
See if we could get an interview.
It would be exciting.
With them. They're going to have some neat stuff there. And it's one of those aquariums where they are trying to be really interactive. They have a lot of things you can touch.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also not just fish, but they've got a large reptile collection, things like that. So it'll be fun to see.
We're excited.
How things develop mm-hmm. along those lines. And hopefully you'll be listening to an interview about that aquarium at some point.
Hopefully sometime this summer, because they open in August, so.
Yeah. All right, I think that's all we've got for the week. So,
meantime,
may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.